Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have updates on coronavirus, including daycare facilities, the energy sector, and how Montana shelters are trying to help those in abusive relationships during the shelter-in-place order. It's Thursday, April 2nd. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Montana is heading into this year's wildland fire season with near-average conditions. The National Interagency Fire Center's predictive services forecasts light wildfire potential and activity through April, though warm and breezy periods before spring green-up could lead to fire activity along the Rocky Mountain front as storms move through. Western Montana received less than half of its average precipitation last month, but temperatures were also below average, saving mountain snowpack. Western Montana is expected to see a warmer and drier May and June, which could lead to accelerated snowpack melting, fine fuels curing, and dead fuels drying out. The onset of fire season there is expected in early June. Central and eastern Montana are forecast to see near-average temperatures and near to above-average precipitation in June. NIFC says soils appear moist enough to stop fuels from rapidly drying out. Normal fire potential is expected through July. Firefighters on the Crow Tribe's reservation have already responded to nearly two dozen wildland fires there caused by escaped ditch burning, an unattended sweat, abandoned campfires, and a sparking electric utility pole. Glacier National Park has awarded a new contract for its popular shuttle service. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports this comes after Flathead County canceled its contract with the park, claiming it wasn't paid enough to supply drivers.
Flathead County supplied drivers for the park's fleet of 35 buses since the service came into being in 2007. The popular bus rides give free lifts to visitors along Going to the Sun Road, and usage has increased 61% since it started, particularly in the last couple of years when park visitorship has skyrocketed. Glacier announced Tuesday that private company LC Staffing of Kalispell entered into a new contract to provide drivers. The park says the service could begin operating a hiker-biker service on the lower sections of the road before the Alpine section is opened. However, the park remains closed due to the coronavirus pandemic, and park officials say they will abide by general guidance from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention when it comes to reopening the park. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
With Montana News, I'm Corin Cades Carney.
And I'm Nikki Ouellette. As of 7 p.m. Wednesday, Montana is reporting 217 known cases of the COVID-19 illness caused by the novel coronavirus. 19 people are hospitalized, and the state health department says 5 people have died.
Following up on Governor Steve Bullock's order earlier this week, the Montana National Guard is sending 73 soldiers and airmen to screen people coming into the state for signs of the illness caused by the novel coronavirus. They'll be stationed at airports and train stations across the state, taking temperatures of people deboarding and connecting them with a medical provider if they have a fever.
And this is because all travelers coming into Montana are under an order to self-quarantine for 2 weeks when they arrive.
And another new development, the Montana Supreme Court issued an opinion late yesterday in response to the ACLU of Montana and disability rights advocates. The group filed suit yesterday saying the state isn't doing enough to prevent inmates in its care from getting COVID-19. Our colleague Edward O'Brien reported this story yesterday and spoke with Bernadette Franks Ongoy, the executive director of Disability Rights Montana.
We want all detainees to be safe, and people with disabilities are particularly vulnerable in a prison setting.
How did state officials respond to this?
Hours after the suit was filed, Governor Steve Bullock issued some directives for the justice system aimed at keeping inmates safe. Some of those policies were already in place, but the groups say those efforts aren't enough and are moving forward with the suit. The state Supreme Court says this is serious enough The state needs to file a counterargument in 5 days.
In another rapid development, yesterday the Toole County Public Health Department announced a third death there. Toole County currently has 6 cases. Their population there is just less than 5,000 people, and their positive case count for COVID-19 includes employees at the Marias Medical Center in Shelby, that's the county's hospital, and also employees at the Marias Heritage Center. This is a retirement and assisted living center that has 38 apartments in it. And the medical center says that others were exposed, so they're expecting to likely see more positive cases show up in Toole County. They've taken steps to contain, do the contact tracing, asking people to self-isolate.
Over the past week, we've been starting to see a steeper incline in the positive cases in Montana. And again, those are just the tested positive cases. We know there are other cases that aren't being tested out there. And over the weekend, 2 deaths were announced in a single day.
And sadly, it's probably going to remain that way and get worse. The Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, this is an independent population health research center at the University of Washington Medicine, they released a forecast that's meant to help hospitals prepare for a surge of COVID cases.
And are they forecasting anything specific for Montana?
UW is expecting to see a peak resource use, so that's peak surge in hospitalizations, on April 26th. Montana is about 10 days behind the national average in that regard. They're predicting we will have a shortage of ICU beds by 44. They say we'll need 103 ventilators.
Nikki, I'm not trying to sound too dire, but also being realistic with what projections are. What is this group forecasting for deaths in Montana?
They're expecting Montana will hit its peak in deaths on April 25th. They're saying 9 deaths could happen on that day, but it's a range, anywhere from 5 to 15. They are forecasting a total of 270 deaths from the COVID-19 illness through August.
How long do they say the surge in Montana could last?
The forecast only considers the next 4 months. They say our peaks will be in late April, early May, but we will be seeing impacts through at least mid-June.
And where is this information in these forecasts? Where is it coming from?
They're pulling info from the World Health Organization, national governments, and they made a model using hospital capacity and use data and other data from observed COVID cases in specific locations. And really, these models need to be taken with a grain of salt. They're just forecasts. John Felton is the Yellowstone County public health officer, and he actually spoke about this particular model at a press conference yesterday.
We use those models to the best of our ability, but it's really, you really can't say exactly what this is going to look like in 2 weeks or a month or 2 months.
Another thing that's particular about this University of Washington forecast is that it assumes that all of the social distancing measures that are currently in place, so the stay-at-home order, the traveler quarantine, the school and business closures, it assumes all of those will remain in place and people will actually do it. And that's the numbers we're seeing based on those assumptions.
Failure to follow these recommendations for a substantial period of time likely means more sick people, increased demands on our already overstressed healthcare and social service systems, and ultimately more families burying their loved ones.
And Felton, like every other healthcare provider out there, is saying wash your hands, cover your cough, and really widen your personal bubble. Thank you, Nikki.
Thanks, Corin.
The Montana National Guard is activating 73 soldiers and airmen to screen people coming into the state for signs of illness from the novel coronavirus. Under orders from Governor Steve Bullock, guardsmen and women will be stationed at 17 train stations and airports in 11 cities starting Friday.
So an airplane will unload. They will temperature check everyone coming off of that airplane, give them some information about the request for or the directive of a mandatory self-quarantine.
Bullock said at a press conference Tuesday, the National Guard will connect people registering a fever with a medical provider by phone or video chat and share that information with local public health officials. Bullock says he hasn't given the National Guard the authority to make arrests. Bullock is ordering travelers into the state to self-quarantine for 2 weeks when they arrive. National Guardsmen and women will be staged at airports in Bozeman, Billings, Kalispell, Missoula, Helena, Great Falls, and Butte, and train stations in Whitefish, Havre, Shelby, and Wolf Point. A National Guard liaison officer will also be stationed at each location to work with local public health, disaster and emergency services, and facility officials. The governor's order runs through April 10th, but may be extended. Governor Steve Bullock yesterday issued a directive aimed at curbing the spread of COVID-19 in Montana's correctional facilities, but it was dismissed as too little, too late by the American Civil Liberties Union of Montana and disability rights advocates. The Montana Supreme Court weighed in late in the afternoon. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
Governor Bullock's directive is meant to ensure Montana's correction staff are taking the necessary precautions to guard against the spread of COVID-19. It includes steps such as 14-day quarantines for new transfers and protocols for testing inmates who have symptoms and isolation of symptomatic inmates. Alex Raid of the American Civil Liberties Union of Montana dismisses the move as insufficient.
What we need to see are extraordinary measures, and unfortunately, the government's directive simply doesn't go far enough to protect against the rampant spread of the virus in our correctional facilities.
Montana Supreme Court Chief Justice Mike McGrath last month asked city and county courts to consider releasing as many nonviolent people from jail as possible. ACLU of Montana's Alex Raitt says that's resulted in a patchwork response.
What we're seeking is a uniform order from the Montana Supreme Court directing that all facilities undertake that review and immediately reduce their incarcerated population.
ACLU of Montana, along with a Bozeman law firm, are representing a group that advocates for people with disabilities. Disability Rights Montana asked the state Supreme Court Wednesday to order the release of some nonviolent prison and jail inmates to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. Bernadette Franks-Ongoy is DRM's executive director.
We want all detainees to be safe, and people with disabilities are particularly vulnerable in a prison setting.
The Montana Supreme Court indicated it's taking the petition seriously. In a majority opinion issued late Wednesday afternoon, justices ordered state officials to prepare a response to the petition within 5 days. Justices Dirk Sandifer and Jim Rice dissented from the majority, saying in part, the petitioners did not prove any state agencies are failing in their responsibilities to protect inmates. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
Self-employed, gig workers, and freelancers in Montana can now file for unemployment benefits under the federal aid package passed by Congress and signed by President Donald Trump last week. The $2 trillion spending bill aims to provide economic relief amid the novel coronavirus pandemic that's caused statewide stay-at-home orders and businesses to close their doors. State officials are still working on building the federal changes to unemployment benefits into Montana's unemployment website, montanaworks.gov. The website is seeing unprecedented visitors filing unemployment insurance claims. The federal relief bill allows people in Montana receiving unemployment to get an additional $600 a week. The state labor department says it's waiting on the federal government for additional details, and those payments are not yet available. But the state says the new benefits will be backdated to the week of March 15th or 23rd. Nearly 40,000 new claims for unemployment have been filed in Montana since the first positive case of the novel coronavirus was confirmed in the state in mid-March. Daycare facilities are now deemed an essential business during the coronavirus outbreak in Montana. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports Governor Steve Bullock is asking facilities to prioritize the children of other essential workers.
Bullock is ordering childcare businesses to first serve children of parents that are deemed essential employees working in fields such as healthcare, law enforcement, or in grocery stores. The directive says facilities should serve no more than 24 children at a time and to separate groups of 10 or fewer children in different rooms while maintaining the same groups day to day. Mark Roberts co-owns Missoula Early Learning, which is licensed to serve up to 70 kids daily. He says that they have been asking parents who can stay home with their kids to do so, and says the facility hasn't exceeded more than about 14 kids at one time in the last week or so.
You know, we have had some phone calls of other families looking for a place to enroll their kids during this time, but a lot of them were deemed non-essential employees.
Roberts says it shouldn't be difficult for his facility to maintain compliance with Bullock's directive. Bullock says any facilities that are unable to meet the new requirements should cease operations. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Many of us are adjusting to a new normal as we spend much more time inside our houses, rely on apps to see friends and family, and experience a heightened sense of uncertainty. Rachel Kramer spoke with a couple in Bozeman 10 days into their two-week self-quarantine to prevent the spread of the novel coronavirus.
After Jesse DeVoe's housemate tested positive for COVID-19, DeVoe moved in with his girlfriend, Robin Goldblatt, across town. They've been working remotely, baking.
Oh. We have a disaster. It's okay. These are still usable walnuts.
Definitely.
And working out with online videos.
Then you're going to do a side plank with rotation. We'll say we're going to start with...
Jesse and Robin, thanks for speaking with me today. What have been some bright spots during this time when you've been self-quarantined?
We're making more of an effort to talk to all of our loved ones over video call, and even those that are, you know, right here in town, but we can't see in person. We've been having like friends dinner parties virtually where we'll all order and support a local restaurant in town and then share like where we got our food from.
A side note on our self-quarantine, we are letting ourselves go outside and play.
Yeah, in a responsible way. Like, we're avoiding the more popular trailheads right now for our outdoor excursions. And in so doing, we have discovered a lot of local trails. And I didn't know these existed because I get kind of stuck in my usual pattern of going to the same places that I know and like.
What would you say has been one of the harder adjustments over the last 10 days or so?
Probably just not being able to do things with our friends in person.
Even though we're able to get outside on occasion, I think we still do feel a little cooped up.
Yeah. Our house has never been cleaner, though. We have been sanitizing and spraying everything down, and we're all at the house all the time, so we're noticing like when things are dirty, so we've been cleaning like crazy.
And I'm the luckiest boyfriend on the planet, being able to just like
we've been having like extravagant lunches and a constant flow of baked goods coming out of our oven.
That sounds like a great place to be. Jesse, will you be moving back to your original place after the quarantine, or?
Yeah. That's one of the things we haven't really thought about yet.
Yeah, just getting through one day at a time.
Yeah, because things change so rapidly.
Every evening, I just write down a couple things that made me smile that day. It's just important right now to just recognize those little things that we're so grateful for.
Well, Robin and Jesse, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about your experience and how you're adjusting to the new normal.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thanks, Rachel.
DeVoe and Goldblatt say they plan on going to the grocery store when their self-quarantine ends this weekend, but a lot of their social distancing practices will stay the same. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
Like many other essential industries in Montana, the state's energy sector continues the daily grind in the midst of COVID-19 concerns. Kayla DeRoche has been reporting on oil, gas, and coal production and shares her reporting with Nikki Ouellette.
Governor Steve Bullock's stay-at-home and quarantine order for people coming into the state, that's disrupted many businesses statewide, but people still need electricity and other basic services. Kayla, how are utilities and energy developers working amid the coronavirus pandemic?
So that's all been approved as essential work, except with some extra protocol in place. So for instance, Talon Energy is the operator for the Colstrip coal-fired power plant, and they've put some protocols in place, including limiting site access and social distancing and increased cleaning and disinfection.
Earlier this week, TC Energy, that's the company building the Keystone XL oil pipeline, they announced that they are going to move forward with construction this month. This company, TC Energy, is based up in Calgary, Canada. How is this going to work, considering that the border between the United States and Canada is closed to most people? There is a 2-week quarantine order for anyone coming into the state. And there's also this stay-at-home directive from the governor's office. So how will the pipeline still get built?
Under the governor's directive, people are allowed to cross the border for essential services, but Sarah Rayburn, who's a spokesperson with TC Energy, says that right now there is no equipment passing through the border. Everything's happening on the American side. She says the primary contractor is Barnard Construction, which is out of Bozeman, and the workers are coming from the United States.
The construction site is in Phillips County, and then workers are being housed in Valley County. What are county officials saying that this construction project means for them financially and for keeping everyone in the county healthy?
Valley County does have a health order in place. Todd Young is Valley County's public information officer. So he says that most workers arrived around 2 weeks ago, but when they are arriving, if they are new, they go through 14 days of self-isolating.
They have to go in. Yes, self-quarantine in their room when they're not performing their essential service duties.
Also, there's a contingency plan from Barnard Construction that lists a few different things they're doing to make sure everyone stays safe. That includes logging in and out of sites, reporting where people have traveled, filling out a questionnaire. And also, it should be added that these counties are getting property taxes from construction. Young says this is going to be a boon for the county, and that's what Phillips County is saying too. Phillips County Commissioner Richard Dunbar says the pipeline will be bringing in a significant amount of property tax.
It'll help the county out. Right now, we're farm and ranch community, and of course, they're struggling. We have a natural gas field, and the price of natural gas is less than $2. So the revenue there is way down. So we're struggling here at the county level for budgets.
The county and the school district are splitting about $2.5 million.
How soon might oil be flowing through the Keystone XL pipeline?
TC Energy says the pipeline's supposed to be in service in 2023.
So Kayla, most sectors of the economy are really hurting during this pandemic. Is that also true for oil and gas prices?
Prices in the United States are suffering overall because of the ongoing price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia, and that includes Bakken oil. So just for example, Williston sweet crude oil, at its highest in March, on March 3rd, it was $37 a barrel, and on March 25th, it was roughly $14 a barrel. So that's a big difference.
It might feel like most things are on hold at the moment, but Kayla, what about planning for the future? Are government agencies still moving new energy projects forward?
It appears so. Some environmental groups are worried the public is distracted when it comes to land management issues, and that includes Montana Environmental Information Center Deputy Director Ann Hedges.
These ideas or these proposals aren't getting the scrutiny that they deserve and that they need to make sure that we're making good decisions about our public lands.
Federally mandated systems are still in place, and that includes things like quarterly oil and gas lease sales. And Montana Bureau of Land Management spokesperson Al Nash says that's still happening.
Our oil and gas lease sales for quite some time now have been online. Our notices to the public go out electronically.
On the other hand, the Environmental Protection Agency recently relaxed enforcement of certain accidental environmental violations. So that's things like routine compliance monitoring, integrity testing, sampling, reporting obligations, so things like that.
What's happening on the regulatory side of energy at the state level here in Montana?
I immediately think of the Montana Public Service Commission. So meetings for the PSC were canceled in March, and on their website it says they're revisiting at the beginning of this month to see if more cancellations are needed.
That was Yellowstone Public Radio's Nikki Ouellette speaking with reporter Kayla DeRoche about the energy sector's status amid coronavirus concerns. Sheltering in place to curb the spread of the novel coronavirus is stressful and challenging. But for those living with controlling or abusive partners, it can be downright dangerous. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports on how Montana shelters are responding to those trapped in abusive relationships and who now have fewer escape options.
Erica Coyle says the writing's on the wall. The stress of global pandemic and economic crisis is already leading to a surge in domestic violence.
We're starting to get data from other countries and other cities that are a little bit ahead of the curve from Montana. We know that the rate of violence is increasing every single day, that survivors are isolated with their abusive partners.
Coyle is executive director of Bozeman's Haven program, which offers an array of services for survivors of domestic violence.
Many of those survivors, because they or their partners are no longer going to work, they don't have a break at which they can call Haven and receive the support that they need.
Phone calls to the agency have for the moment plateaued, but as Yellowstone Public Radio reported this week, requests for advice and help via Haven's online chat service spiked by 300% last week. When Governor Steve Bullock issued a stay-at-home order for Montanans until April 10th, he urged victims of domestic violence to leave their home and stay somewhere else safe. But that can be hard to find, especially now. Even under the best of economic circumstances, finding affordable housing is notoriously difficult in Missoula. But according to Becky Margolis with the YWCA,
trying to rent a new place right now, it would be really challenging. Definitely a hard time to be renting or trying to find a place to rent.
YWCA of Missoula also serves survivors of violence. Margolis says the YWCA is also fielding more requests for help, particularly from those experiencing economic hardships in the face of the growing COVID-19 pandemic.
Last week, we had a lot more phone calls from people. They weren't homeless yet, but they were afraid they were going to lose their housing, maybe because they had been laid off or had their hours at work reduced or something like that.
An order put in place by the governor this week prevents landlords from evicting tenants if they can't pay rent, although rent is still due. Margolis says YWCA of Missoula is trying to help clients do whatever they can to help cover basic housing needs.
Helping them figure out how to talk to their landlord, or if there's friends or family that they could ask for help or stay with if they needed to, and just trying to really help people tap into resources that they have in their lives to prevent homelessness from happening.
Bozeman's Erica Coyle says her team at Haven is working overtime to keep electronic lifelines available to survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault.
And so we're getting as creative as we possibly can. We've increased our online chat hours, so that's now available from 7:30 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
Haven's moved as many services as possible online so clients can still access them when face-to-face interaction is now discouraged. To that end, the organization is working to get cell phones and tablets to clients who may not otherwise have their own.
Haven is considered an essential service, but we're also wanting to stop the spread of COVID-19 in our community. We serve Gallatin County, and this is the county that's being the hardest hit in Montana. So we want to keep survivors in our community both safe and healthy.
To encourage social distancing, both Haven and YWCA of Missoula have reduced how many people they can give shelter to at their buildings. YWCA's Becky Margolis says local motel rooms are a less than ideal but necessary alternative. Haven's Erica Coyle agrees, adding there are plenty of them to go around, at least for now.
That being said, I am starting to hear from other shelters across the state of hotels temporarily closing down because they don't have the business they need to be able to pay their workers. And so we can't guess what each day or each week is going to bring. So we're starting to come up with contingency plans A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
YWCA Missoula's Becky Margolis reminds Montanans that abuse isn't always overtly violent, that it comes in many forms.
So that can look like financial abuse, so taking their partner's money that they earn at a job or withholding money from them. It can look like name calling, put downs, you know, gaslighting, so they pretend that their partner's crazy. Sometimes it can involve using children as a pawn to gain power over the partner.
Haven's Erica Coyle says everyone is facing a huge learning curve in the face of the COVID outbreak, but she vows that Montana shelters will always be there for those seeking help.
Our biggest concern right now is making sure that survivors know we are still here. And whenever it's safe for them to reach out, will be here.
The Community Support Center for Victims of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Crisis Line is 800-253-9811. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.